Questions, whatever you want to add to the, you're more than welcome to simply raise your hand and participate.
You know, this isn't really a sermon, it's just a discussion.
A sermonette, I guess. I don't know what they call them. So I'm going through the book of Mark, and I'm up to the point of where Jesus is on the ship, and he is calming the weather. Mark 4, 35 through the end of the chapter. And I'm going to read out of the Jerusalem Bible. It's a different translation than the NIV that I normally use. Can you hear me, Dick? With the coming of the evening, that same day, he said to them, "Let us cross over to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him just as he was in a boat, and there was other boats with him. Then it began to blow a gale, and the waves were breaking into the boat so that it was almost swamped. But he was in the stern and his head on a cushion asleep. They woke him and said to him, "Master, do you not care? We are going down." And he woke up and he rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Quiet now, be calm." And the wind dropped, and all was calm again. And then he said to them, "Why are you so frightened? How is it that you have no faith?" They were filled with awe and said to one another, "Who can this be? Even the wind and the sea obeys him." The gales of November. The legend of the Edmund Fitzgerald remains one of the most mysterious and controversial of all sea wreck tales heard around the Great Lakes. Her story is surpassed in books and films and media only by the story of the Titanic. Gordon Lightfoot, many of you would know, was inspired to write a popular folk tale, a ballad, in 1976, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Conflicting theories about what caused the tragedy remains active today. No one knows what caused the ship to take on water or what weather phenomenon was enough for it to lose its buoyancy and dive straight into the bottom and break in two. So quickly, without a single cry for help. It sank in November 10th, 1975, 17 miles north-northwest of Whitefish Point, Michigan, losing all 29 of its crew. Weather phenomenons have been with us from the beginning of time. Noah's in the Bible was one of the first that I can remember. Controlling the weather has long been sought. And in 1947, it was discovered that seeding the clouds with dry ice and aluminum product of some sort, you can make it rain. Science has been making progress, but there has been, up to this point, repercussions. When you try to change the weather, or you modify the weather, or you try to push a cloud mass or compress it or move it, it goes somewhere else and it rains worse. That's generally what happens. Princeton College, a Princeton University in New Jersey, has done extensive research in weather modification. You can go on their website and you can, they have all sorts of stuff and they've been working on it for quite a while. They have been dealing with the idea, one of the things, of that thought and prayer can change the weather. The problem is that you can't scientifically prove it. That becomes a problem because you don't know what the weather was supposed to do originally. So even though you may have changed it or thought you have changed it, scientific empirical evidence is hard to find. You can't have a controlled environment in which the scientists can say, okay, this happened, and that happened. And so skepticism has come about. Princeton, from what I have heard and researched for quite a few years, has done thought experiments on changing the weather. And they say they have changed the weather. The problem is with prayer and changing the weather is you can make it rain, but you can't make it stop. And that has been a problem. Even in a story of the Bible, which I'll get to with Elijah, that's what happened. Shane touched on it last Sunday a little bit. There's no question about it, though, that we are still trying to change the weather. The idea of the butterfly effect, which I have mentioned, a meteorologist has coined a phrase, the butterfly effect, because in a controlled environment in which he calculated out to point out several hundredths in his experiment, but when he calculated it all, he didn't go out far enough in his calculus, point way out there. And when he came back, he realized that he didn't calculate his calculations out far enough, and the end result was something different than what he thought. And so he coined the phrase butterfly effect, because 1,000th or 1/10,000th number of a change from 1 to 2 or 3 to 9 affected the weather. Thus, the phrase the butterfly effect. Small changes in his calculations had great changes. Militarizing the weather has been sought. There is what is called the HAARP up in Alaska. Russia has one, and I think China has another. We have the greatest of it. It's called High Frequency Active Aerial Research Program. It's a electromagnetic using radio waves of some sort to influence the weather, to cause earthquakes, tsunamis, and disrupted communication systems. We know this exists. They have been doing it. It's called the HAARP. You can look it up. It's supposed to have the power of 10,000 times more than a lightning bolt. And it is being used. Again, in 1947, we learned that seeding the clouds with silver oxide particles and dry ice could make it rain. Colorado, I think it was one of the first experiments they did. China is also working on it, and I'm sure there's other countries that are working on it. In 2008, in the Beijing Olympics, they seeded the clouds to move the clouds away from the Olympics so it wouldn't rain. You can go, as again, research it. Chemtrails. Anybody know what chemtrails are? They are basically primarily ice crystals, the trails that you see in the jets that fly across. Some believe that they're putting some kind of aluminum product in the jet fuel, and to reflect back into the space the sunlight so the Earth doesn't warm as much. There are many skeptics. It's hard to prove, as with anything else. The question is this morning, is there stories in the Bible about weather phenomena, modification? And the answer is yes. I'm going to read a few words from Job. Job was having a discussion with, I think, three of his sons, and one of them said this. God's voice thunders in miraculous ways. He does great things beyond our understanding. He says to the snow, fall on the earth, and to the rain shower, be a mighty downpour, so that everyone he has made may know his work. He stops all people from their labor. The animals take cover. They remain in their dens. The tempest comes out of its chamber, the cold from the driving wind. The breath of God produces ice, and the broad waters become frozen. He loads the clouds with moisture. He scatters his lightning through them. At his direction, they swirl around over the face of the whole earth and do whatever he commands them. He brings the clouds to punish the earth or to water its earth and to show his love. Listen to this, Job. Stop and consider God's wonders. Do you know how God controls the clouds and makes his lightning flash? Do you know how the clouds hang poised? Those wonders of him who has perfect knowledge. There are stories in the Bible, one about manipulation or changing of the weather. One of them, the first one I'm going to talk about a little bit, is Noah. It was during the flood. God caused it to rain 40 days and 40 nights. Moses parted the waters. People scoff at this idea that Moses may have known how to part the waters. There is a weather phenomenon that is one of the terms that's called wind set down, in which there are two winds coming together, shear winds, and it will pile up the water. They've known this phenomenon does happen, and it happens maybe rarely, but it happens, even in modern day. They know this happens. So the question is, did Moses know when this was going to happen, or did he have the power to bring God to bring these winds to do so? Weather change. It was happening, even in the Bible. Joshua also parted the water. Jonathan, we know the story about the fleece, in which he put it out in order to test God, and said, put all the dew on the fleece and nowhere around. And then the next time he still didn't believe it, he said, put all the dew all around and none in the fleece. And it was a way to test God's will, or making sure that God wanted him to do a certain thing. One of the big stories in which always fascinated me was Elisha, who made it stop raining for, I think, 3 to 7 years? 3 years? 3 years? And he said it by praying. He stopped it raining by the word given to God from Yahweh, the God of Israel, spoke to him and said, pray that the rain stops. And it did. I'm not quite sure if it was an act of Yahweh, the God of Israel, or if it was prayer from Elisha. It's not specifically clear. I believe it's prayer from Elisha. So it didn't rain for 3 years. And after 3 years, he prayed that it would rain. And remember the story? He went and sent Elisha out to look, or his servant out to look, and he prayed 3 times. The first time he went out, didn't see nothing. The second time he didn't see nothing. And the third time he went out, and he saw a small cloud. The problem again, even with Elisha's time, was it was a downpour. And he had, by some miraculous means, moved ahead of the chariots and got ahead of the torrential rains that came. It poured. This is what happens. This is the phenomenon that I talked about earlier. Yes, you can pray for rain. And it's been done, but it pours, and usually ends up being flood. If we were aware of the stories, these stories in the Bible, would we have stood up and maybe shrieked disbelief as I read the story? I have a question. Do the winds of weather carry the Spirit of God in them? Anybody want to comment on that one? Does it have a life force? Is there a life force in the winds? Is there a spirit in the winds? Or is it simply free to do whatever it wants? Or is it mere thermodynamics? The laws of thermodynamics, is that all that dictates it? It must do this, and then it must do that, and then it must do the other thing? Is it controlled merely by the laws? A pragmatic and a person who kind of thinks that science is the only way out would say that yes, it's nothing but a mere thermodynamics. I'm not sure. A little of both? It's certainly an energy force for sure. Does it have a spirit? Job said it does. Carries within it the spirit of God. It does what it's told to do. It's controlled. It's a mystery, kind of. Look at the weather that we're happening today. In LA, just this summer. One would wonder, what's going on? I think it's manipulation for sure. But does it have a spirit? That in which Jesus stood up and talked to the spirit of the winds. The Native Americans, First Nation people, talk about the spirit of the winds. We as postmodernists, we discount all of that. I think to our demise, myself, or I think we suffer because of it. I think monotheism has kind of done away with different spirits and different sons of God and the idea of the infiniteness of one, the lack of understanding what one is, the meaning of one. One can be singular and one is infinite. And that's the problem with understanding monotheism. We say God is one, meaning one being, one point, one thing, whatever you want to use. But one is capitalized, meaning God. That's an infinite. It has infinite parts, infinite beings, infinite spirits, infinite. I believe it. When Connie and I go for a walk up the road, sometimes the winds, we have some pines, and you get a little breeze going through that, it almost spooks me. It almost like it's speaking to me. More than once it has. Yeah, there's something there. Of course, I'm easily spooked. But yet, as I said, many, many cultures understood the wind as being a spirit. How are we to take this story? Do we take this as a true event? Something that happened? One of the ways in which I was taught when I was raised, this was a picture of individual lives. They start out kind of easy, and then you have storms, and then through Jesus, your life is settled down. Can we see this story as a parable? Can we take multiple meanings out of it? I think we can. I'm not saying the story didn't happen, because I believe that Jesus had the power to speak to the winds and to calm the winds. I don't have any problem with that at all. I believe in the miraculous. Yes, Dan.
I think the people out west would have been an awful lot of them praying for rain where it's burning. Must be there any good people out there.
Go on.
It all came here.
See, in some respects, the particles of the fire go up and see the clouds, and it moves east. If you're going to see the clouds, you have to go west of the wind, so when you see them, it comes up and rain moves across. So we could be having the effects of the fire by having rain. So you would have to, if you want to affect the weather, you'd have to go out in the ocean. I don't know. This is the weather phenomenons that haven't just happened in this last week over in our area, torrential downpours on top of hills where you would generally think that you would be safe. There was erosion, and rocks came out on the road, and it was a tremendous downpour. How does this all happen in such a? It's just strange how the weather happens. A friend of mine was getting unloaded. We were truck drivers, and he said it rained so hard that he stood less than a truck length away from his truck, and he could barely see the truck. He said, "I've never seen it rain that hard." And that was in Indiana. Now that's raining. That's coming down by the buckets. What is it? How do we see this story? I want to look at the story in a different way. Yes, it can be a true story. Yes, it can be seen as a parable. Yes, it can be seen as a picture of our lives, how we struggle. But I want to see it just a little bit different. I want to look at it as a picture of death and death in transition. The evening is said, the coming of the evening, we can see that as the ending or the closure of our lives, the end of our days, in that same day, it says. So in the evening, it says, they went across to the other side. They went across to the other side. Isn't that a passage word that we say in death and dying? We cross to the other side. Is this a picture of how we cross to the other side? Leaving the crowds behind. We leave the earth behind. We leave that which we know is behind. And we got into the boat. A boat in many, many cultures is seen as a vehicle in which you are transported from this place to the heavenly realms. That would have been known at the time of Jesus' time. A boat would have been understood. If you do any kind of research and understanding the cultures of the past, even in Jesus' time, boat was considered to be a transporting vehicle. So they got into the boat. They were moving from life to life again. A picture of what it's showing. And it began to blow a gale and waves and breaking of the winds and the water coming into the boat and almost swamping. I have never experienced death, so I don't know. But I can imagine that up until the point in which I am beginning to pass and experience final death, there is going to be like gales blowing and waves. I'm going to be upset. I'm going to be scared. I'm going to be wondering. I'm going to be all kinds of emotions that are going to be flared up. I can't imagine my transition, unless it's instantaneous, that I'm not going to have some type of emotions as I move from one to the other in stages. If you're going through a slow dying process, surely there must be some tumultuous things in which you think. So this is a picture of that time in which we have. And we get to the point in which we say, Master, don't you care? We get to that point of our, as in the dying process in which we say, what's wrong? Wake up. We're going down. All this instant moment, at that instant moment, Jesus stands up and says, quiet, be calm. And suddenly the transition moves over calmly. I can see this picture playing out. And the winds drop and all is calm. And as I transition from this life to the next, suddenly I'm in the calm again. And then Jesus says to them, why are you so frightened? Why are we frightened about death? Death, I don't care who we are. I say I'm not worried about dying. It's the process in which I have to go through. It's the gale winds and the tumultuous waves in which I have to go through in order to get there. I'm not sure I'm really scared of it. I know it's coming. We all know it's coming. But I think there's a certain amount of built-in fear that we have. Of not knowing. We're never there. So he says, why are you frightened? And that's what I ask us today and ask myself. Why should I be feared death? Why should I worry? Don't you have faith? We all say we have faith. But that's tough too. That's still not knowing. Faith is tough. How is it that you have no faith? And I think at the moment in which we realize all of this, and as we pass from this life to the next, we will be filled with awe. I think that the word awe depicts up people who have near-death experiences and out-of-body experience. They're filled with awe. There's no words that describe the feeling in which they have as they get a glimpse of the world to come. Who can this be, we would probably ask, that even the winds and the sea obey him? I think this is going to be a point in which, as we pass, and this is a picture of one of the meanings that I take from this story. Who is this? I think even though we understand, or we have an understanding of Jesus, we try to live what Jesus said, we're still going to probably ask the question as we pass, who is this? Who is this? I want to close with 1 Corinthians 15:55. I'm going to read a little bit. For the perishable must clothe itself with the imperishable, and the mortal with immortality. When the perishable has been clothed with imperishable, and the mortal with immortality, then the saying that is written comes true. Death has been swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your victory? O death, where is your sting? Amen.
Never leave me alone, right by my side.